Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hope Solo Speaks. With March Madness starting today, first round wagers have begun for many fans and viewers. March Madness used to be one of my favorite pastimes with my father, so was going to horse races at Emerald Downs. Sports betting was a part of my young adulthood. It was a part of growing up for me, even as a collegiate athlete. But I only bet on horse racing, maybe the Super Bowl, and of course, college basketball. March Madness is one of the busiest and most exciting times of the year for sports bettors. 68 college basketball teams compete for the national championship across 3 weeks, with obviously dramatic upsets. The unpredictable road to the Final Four is what makes college basketball exciting. And in 2018, the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, an act that stopped the legalization of sports betting that was passed in 1992, was deemed unconstitutional by the United States Supreme Court. And by 2021, sports betting became legal. So how has this changed the sports landscape in America? How has the culture of viewing sports changed? How are the networks and leagues adapting to take into consideration the sports bettor? Well, who better to ask than John Orrend? He has covered all things media for Sports Business Journal, and he spent 12 years reporting on the media industry in the United States and in Europe. He is co-host to Marchand and Orrend, a very complete, mind-blowing, and thorough weekly sports media podcast. So please check it out. And please welcome John to the show. John, thank you so much for coming on today. Welcome to Hope Solo Speaks.
Hey, thanks for having me, Hope.
Thanks for being here. It's an exciting time. I was going over your podcast episodes and really looking at the material that you cover, the topics that you cover, and I was pretty fascinated by all of the different topics that you cover, especially, you know, looking into the future of ESPN. I think it's something that we've talked about for probably 2 decades now, the future of ESPN. So you really tackle that issue. And then the Pac-12 media rights, which is obviously very concerning to anybody who's been in the Pac-12, West Coast football, West Coast sports. So I'm fascinated the fact that you tackle that topic as well. And while I have you, I think it's going to be very difficult to focus in on what we're talking about today, which is sports betting. So I have you as the expert to talk to me about sports betting and kind of the history of how it all began, especially in collegiate sports. But before we go there, can you tell us what is the future of ESPN and tell us where we're at with Pac-12 media rights, if you don't mind?
You just went through all of my my story list of all the stories that I have to be working on, including regional sports networks that are out there.
Of course.
You know, the future of ESPN is, you know, if you just look at your own house and how you watch entertainment programming, and when was the last time that you went to a cable channel and sat down and watched a series for an hour, a half hour, and then waited a full week and then sat down again, waited through the commercials and everything? Everybody I know goes to Netflix, goes to Amazon Prime or Apple TV Plus, and they binge watch, you know, various series. The one area that's stuck with cable and people have still kept their cable subscriptions is with sports and with live news or any kind of like live entertainment programming. And slowly we're starting to see Amazon gets Thursday Night Football and Major League Soccer went to Apple TV Plus. And we're starting to see more and more of these streamers who have much deeper pockets than these gigantic media companies. I mean, Apple could buy and sell Disney a couple of times over. And so as they start coming in, you know, if you're a league, you have to think about, do I want to go to get more money? So if you're MLS, you had to think about, do I want more money from Apple, or do I want to take considerably less money and get more people watching on regular terrestrial TV? And, you know, as streaming continues to grow and as cord cutting and rebundling continues to exist, you know, that decision becomes a lot more tougher.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's astonishing the fact that you say Apple can buy over Disney 3 times over. I mean, I have 3-year-olds in the house, so Disney is the only thing on right now. And I think they run the world.
How do they watch it? Do they sit down and watch it on cable?
Oh, no, we have the Disney app.
Yeah. And then so you're watching it on the Apple iPhone, I bet, right? Or iPad, probably.
We stream it on the TV, but yeah.
You're old school, Hope. I guess we're
old school, yeah. Oh, okay. Well, sports betting, it's been a huge topic over the course of, well, for quite some time, to be quite honest, when you look at the history of where it began and how far we've come. So I was hoping that you could really be our expert today to give us kind of the history of sports betting. So real quickly, and then you can take us from there. The Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act stopped the legalization of sports betting in much of the United States upon its passing in 1992. And it stayed that way for more than 25 years. Now, can you give us a history after 1992?
Well, you just described it. I mean, gambling was not only a vice, it was illegal in almost all of the United States, save for Vegas and Atlantic City. And so it was a pretty easy decision for networks and for leagues to keep gambling at an arm's length distance. It was something that was they couldn't actually profit from. Around that time, in the mid 90s, going through the early 2000s, the networks and leagues discovered that ratings, particularly for football, the NFL, were rising, going through the roof. And one of the reasons that they thought that was happening is the rise in fantasy football, which is there are a million reasons. This isn't the only reason, but they look at that. And so you would be watching a Monday night game that involved maybe the Jaguars against the Titans. You know, you didn't really care about it, but you had a player going. So you're going to sit down and you're going to watch it, or you're watching another game and it's a blowout, but you still have the running back and you know, it's a tight game. So you part of TV ratings and TV viewership is not about actually tuning in. It's about how long you tune in. And so this kept people watching longer and longer. And so that was a light bulb over some of these people about what gambling and what betting on games can do in terms of getting active viewers that are sitting and watching and really watching the whole thing, the whole game. And as then you had daily fantasy come out, and that was I'm skipping ahead decades, but daily fantasy came out, I think that was probably about 10-13 years ago, they were not gambling. I don't know if anybody's watching, but I used air quotes on that, you know. But they made it so that they weren't gambling, and they bought, I don't know if you remember, they had ads in every time there was a timeout in every sport that was on television. And again, it was another light bulb moment. I mean, the leagues, the networks were like, wow, here is a huge revenue stream that we can get from gambling. And so periodically, as gambling is getting legalized in state by state across the country, you know, the networks have decided like they're going to go all in on it. So it's no longer a vice. It's no longer something that, you know, there's always the joke about Al Michaels, who's a NBC play-by-play announcer, you know, talking about the over under, but using euphemisms as he talked about it. Brent Musburger would talk about our friends in the desert, where he would talk about Las Vegas. Now you can actually say, boy, they hit the over, or you can talk about like, oh, the Vegas line is whatever it happens to be. And what I found to be surprising is not only have the networks decided that this is a great new revenue stream, there's also the actual leagues and the teams themselves that are saying like, well, we're not going to leave this great new potential revenue stream just to the networks. Like, so the leagues and the teams are trying to get into bed also with the gambling companies and figure out how to profit from that as well. So it's in a relatively short amount of time, it's become really embedded into how people produce and watch sports.
Of course, I have a story I tell all the time about my husband, who formerly played in the NFL. Right when the fantasy leagues really took off. So in the early 2000s, like you talked about. And I'll never forget, he told me, he came out the field, I think he had like two touchdowns, a couple catches, whatever, right? And he came off and he got booed by a lot of the people, the fans surrounding the tunnel, because on their fantasy teams, they needed him to score 3 touchdowns. So he didn't get the job done. And instead of it, the fan being there to witness the Seahawks win and to really, you know, be a fan of the team winning, that's when he recognized that there was a shift, and it was more about kind of the fans' experience and their predictions and less about the team. And it actually broke his heart. And I tell that story all the time because fantasy football, fantasy sports betting really changed for some of the athletes and how they feel the fan support is. And we'll get to that in a minute. But I always like to tell that story because it was a strange time in the early 2000s when fantasy leagues and sports betting really came out.
So can I ask you a quick question?
Of course.
You, of course, were a major goalie for the U.S. team and for soccer. Did you know the betting lines going in? Were you aware? Not did you do anything to cause them to go one way or another, but you certainly knew about sort of what an over-under was in your games, I would think. No?
No, I did not. I recall being on a fantasy team at some tournament, whether it was the Olympics or the World Cup. And I was like, what is this shit? I'm going to try and not let the team score, and I'm going to try and win a gold medal. Like,
yeah.
But I never looked at the odds. I never looked at that. I thought it was weird. I thought it was strange. Again, you're showing my age. I think I'm from a different mentality and a different era. But it came out, and I really just cared about winning. That's all I cared about. Mm-hmm. So I never looked at the odds or the over and under or what fantasy team I was on.
Yeah, I wonder if that has shifted to where it could, because it's so in your face now. It's almost hard not to know going in.
Yeah, well, let's keep going back to the history. The law actually came off the books in 2018 when the U.S. Supreme Court deemed it unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. So state governments were allowed to set their own policies. Is that still how it is? Are there any states that do not allow for sports betting?
Yeah, several states do not allow sports betting. I don't have the exact number off the top of my head, but a little bit more than half allow for sports betting, and there have been a couple that have just said they've had the vote. They said no, but it's a close vote. And if you're, you know, the state of Maryland, where I, you know, which is close to where I am, the part of what they were talking about is, why are we sending people over state lines to you know, bet and the tax revenue, and like, we need that revenue here, because so that they've taken, yeah, again, what historically has been a vice, and decided that, you know, there's too much revenue that's attached to that.
Well, I found it strange because some of the biggest states that still don't allow for sports betting would be California, Florida, and Texas, of all places. And you talk about revenue streaming and keeping the money, you know, in state. And then you have this huge state who is fond of football, fond of collegiate football, and they're not making any revenue from it. I find that completely bizarre, but it has been passed federally, and states are allowed to make their own decisions on sports betting.
Yeah, and
I find absolutely fascinating.
What you just described there, Hope, you know, the one of the bluest states in the union in California, and one of the reddest states in the union in Texas, the idea of the legalization of sports gambling doesn't really have a political affiliation that's, you know, easily to identify.
Yeah. All right. So that's the history. So in 2018, states can make their own decisions on sports gambling, or I guess I should say sports betting. Gambling is deemed unlawful, illegal. So this is legal gambling, which I guess the word that we need to be using is sports betting, not gambling. But the
fact, you know what they say, they always get mad at me because I always, it is gambling. So I call
it gambling. Give me a break. It's gambling.
They're like, it's gaming.
Oh, no.
They got the BML. Yeah. Yeah.
I guess gaming can be described as many things this day and age. Huh? So the Supreme Court decision paved the way to this entirely different sports landscape. What changes have you seen in the way sports is covered? I mean, you mentioned it earlier. You used to see commercials, advertisements every few minutes. But how has it really changed the way sports is covered from the media standpoint?
So from a media standpoint, it really, in the NFL, which is the biggest league, of course, out there, you haven't seen a ton. You're not seeing the announcers talk about betting lines or over unders, or and you're not seeing on screen graphics during games. The pregame shows and the postgame shows are a totally different matter. I mean, you have on Fox win Terry Bradshaw's money, you know, and it's again, it's sort of a gambling, you know, they talk about the odds, not, I think the Cowboys are going to win. It's like, I think the Cowboys are going to cover, you know, and so there's a totally different way of talking about it. But if you take a look at the XFL, which just launched a couple of weeks ago on ESPN and ABC, and the USFL that's going to launch in next month in April on Fox and NBC, the way that they have, the way that gambling is a part of those telecasts is, I'm not willing to say that's the future. I think that they're testing right now to see what the appetite is for the viewers and for the leagues, where you have the gambling lines that are almost on a ticker underneath the score bug. You do have the announcers saying after a touchdown, like, they just got the over, you know, and they have more than dived into gambling. They've really embraced sports gambling, and they feel that many of their viewers are going to do that as well. And so that's an area to look at. And just one other area is with the NBA, the here in DC, and I think that they did it in Chicago too. These are both regional sports networks that are affiliated with NBC Sports. There was a Wizards game, and you go to the regular NBC Sports Washington channel, and you could watch the game just normally, or you could go to the Overflow channel, and it would be a totally betting tailored game about, and so the people would be talking about who's going to score the next basket, or they would be talking about, you know, is Kyle Kuzma going to get 10 points this quarter, or, you know, or more or less. And you could, as a fan, sort of text in or go online and participate in that. And so there's a lot of testing going on right now, and nobody really knows how this is going to end up, period. Yeah. I think one thing that I have noticed, and I don't know if this is going to hold, is that there are a lot of people that don't want gambling as a part of the telecast, and they're conscious of that. And so there is going to be a feed. Like, if you just don't want any of that, there is going to be a feed, almost certainly, that's just going to be the traditional game. Whether or not they get the announcers to comply is a totally separate topic.
No kidding, huh? Well, it seems to have changed the way the game is really communicated to the audience. You know, different vocabulary, like you said, over and under. You said the XFL is kind of testing the waters, but it seems like the events, whatever event it is more interactive for the fan. I was going to ask you if you think fans really care about sports betting, but obviously there is an audience and a huge fan base that does care about sports betting. And you can see that's why these major organizations, franchises, television rights companies are testing the waters, is because there's interest in it. So I was going to ask you, are more fans and folks turned off by the constant talk about the lines and the over and the unders? Or do they actually tune in because of it? But it sounds like you're saying there's two separate audiences.
I think there's two audiences. And I think that my personal opinion, and I don't have a lot of, I don't have any data to back this up, but I do talk to the TV executives. Most people want to see a normal a telecast that isn't inundated with betting odds. However, the people that do want to see that betting odd data, they are rabid fans. Well, I don't know if you can call them fans, but they're rabid consumers of that game. They're going to stick until the end of the game. They're going to sit through the commercial breaks because they don't want to miss the game that they've gambled on. And so there is that segment there that you really want to tailor to. And if they started, it used to be, here I go sounding like an old guy, hope, but it used to be where you would bet on, okay, I think this team's going to win by this many points. But now they have all these in-game bets that you can make. So I could have bet, like, I think Hope Solo is going to get 5 saves this half, and I would be waiting to see if that hits, and you can change that bet as you go on. So that segment is really in there, and the TV networks want to figure out how to make them happy and how to keep them satisfied so that they continue to bet and tune in.
Yeah. Well, so you're in the industry, obviously. You speak to the executives, you kind of have you got the inside scoop on where things are going to go with the television networks, but how do the athletes, do you have any idea how the actual athletes feel about it?
I don't. And that's actually one of the things when I knew I was going to talk to you about this and with you and your husband, and you said you don't know. And the story you told about your husband, where it's like, it made him sad. However, so I think some of these younger athletes, I don't talk to the athletes, so I really don't know, but I would imagine a lot of these younger athletes, this is what they grew up with. So they're totally conscious about being a fantasy player and getting, that extra touchdown or yard or what the point spreads are.
Well, I guess we are the last of a dying breed. And I'll take great pride in that, by the way.
Yeah, wear that with a pin. Exactly.
Yes, I will. Sports betting has been legal in Europe for quite a long time. You can see the sponsorships, like the sports book sponsorships all over the jerseys. Oh, do you see the coverage in Europe different than what it is now in America?
Oh, I think so. I see everything in Europe with gambling being different. I mean, you can go to an Arsenal match and actually make a bet on that team inside the stadium, which is something that here in DC, Ted Leonsis just opened a sports book that's attached to Capital One Arena, where the Wizards and Caps and play, but. As far as the coverage, it isn't as in your face. But again, I think that what we're doing is in the United States is we're really testing to see how this all shakes out. I mean, Disney for the longest time has said that they want nothing to do with, other than taking their ad dollars. They want nothing to do with sports gambling or sports betting. The revenue stream has gotten to be so big that now, Mickey Mouse is going to be, doing a deal. They're at the final stages of doing a deal with one of the, sports betting companies that sort of integrates ESPN with sports betting a little bit more. So when you see that happen, that it's more than a trend. It's sort of like to use industry speak, it's a real revenue stream that all of them want to sort of partake in.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. What happens then when the first real big gambling scandal hits the United States?
I don't know. I'm waiting to see. I have a fear it's going to be a really big story when it happens. The Donahue, the referee in the Tim Donahue, the NBA referee, that was a big scandal, and this train still continued after that. I mean, back in the day, like you had I think Boston College scandal and, some in different college sports. I mean, that was decades ago where that happened. So undoubtedly there's going to be something. They do have systems where they can tell if somebody's making some bets that like look funny in place, but there are ways to get around that, I'm sure. So I don't know what's going to happen.
Pete Rose, obviously still not into the Hall of Fame because of his betting scandal.
For what's legal now, and baseball is in bed with a lot of those gambling companies,
and maybe he will be re-inducted into, well, not re-inducted, actually inducted into the Hall of Fame now.
Yeah.
But there actually, when you look through the history, there's been a number of sports betting scandals. So there was the 1919 World Series. If you go way back, there's the Pete Rose, like you said, NBA referee. When you look at the different leagues, NBA commissioner was quoted as saying that he believes that sports betting should be brought out of the underground and into the sunlight where it can be monitored and regulated. So he, Adam Silver, was obviously a proponent to have sports betting. But there were other leagues who still have been hesitant, including the NHL and including the NFL for quite some time. Where do you see these leagues going? Has the NFL kind of changed their tune?
Yeah, there's too much money in there for them not to do it. And I think one point that Adam Silver made is that it's happening. And do we want it to happen on the side streets where people are, you know, with a dimly lit street corner? Or do we want it to happen out in the open where people can, it will be easier to potentially find some of those match fixing problems that may or may not arise, and so it's been a slow process, but really every single one of these leagues right now there's just too much money in the advertising around it and in just, you know, getting a different access to fans' wallets.
Yeah, well, it seems like legalizing sports betting was inevitable at some point. But thinking back to when I was a collegiate athlete, I mean, it was unfathomable. You just couldn't walk that line. You couldn't. You'd be dismissed from your university if you partaked in any type of gambling. Now, I grew up going to horse races with my father. I knew how to read the book. I took great pride in it. I would study the horse, study the jockey. I would even look to see if the horse took a dump before he went out to race. I mean, it was something that my father taught me to look at. I mean, they needed to be lighter on their feet. And so you'd want to see these things from the horse. And so I was really into gambling, but I really only thought that was associated with horse racing. Horse racing and gambling kind of went hand in hand. I think the only other betting I did in my younger years, my young adult years, was maybe for the Super Bowl. And then for March Madness, but fear was pumped into me as a collegiate athlete that you just stayed away from gambling and betting, unless you were at the horse races, then everything was fine at that point.
and I think that's part of how this happened was that it was, you know, Vegas and Atlantic City and, you know, three horse races a year, basically, you know, the majors. And then it was the March Madness brackets. Mm-hmm. And then how many times did you buy squares for the Super Bowl about what's the score going to be at the end of the first quarter, the half, the third quarter, and the end of the game? And there are all these different, like, you know, state run lottos almost, you know, I filled out a bracket, but that's not gambling, you know, but I did put in my $20. So, you know, so it just made it a lot easier for when you said it was inevitable because you had all these different things that you did that sort of knocked down the walls that were there when you were a collegiate student. And so I wonder, Hope, like you were at a big college. You can bet on Division III games too. I mean, and if we're talk about sunlight. Is there enough sunlight to get down in those areas? That's where my concern would be.
So, has sports betting affected the NCAA and collegiate sports differently than professional sports, or are we seeing the same things with commentating and media coverage?
It hasn't hit collegiate sports in the same sort of way. Again, it's easier. I brought up the XFL and the USFL. You know, the USFL is owned by Fox Sports, so they're able to test things a lot differently. You're not going to hear over under talk during March Madness on CBS or on any of the Turner networks. I think there still is a even though you can bet on these games, even though everybody does a bracket, There still is a sense of, like, you know, it's the college game, and, you know, let's the that's not a, that that's just a step that's going to be that that could be taken eventually, but they're waiting very carefully in that area.
Well, as of the 2021/22 school year, the NCAA official manuals expressly still banned participating in sports wagering activities. And that was in 2021-2022. Mm-hmm. So they expressly banned it. So I think they're a little bit behind maybe the professional leagues. The NCAA maintains that sports wagering has the potential to undermine the integrity of sports and jeopardizes the well-being of student athletes and the intercollegiate athletics community. Do you think this is true? Does it really jeopardize the well-being of the student athlete?
I think so. I mean, I'm going to call it, I might sound like a little bit of a prude hero, but like I've seen gambling, sports gambling, ruin people's lives. I mean, it's literally an addiction that people have, and people don't view it as just stop gambling. That's all you have to do. It's the same as, oh, just stop drinking. You don't have to be an alcoholic. And it's I think that there is still an education that has to happen with the public. And I think that, I don't know if I would use those words, but it's certainly a potential problem that is out there. Yeah.
Well, will you be betting for this March Madness or on today's game? In fact,
like I said, I'm a prude. I don't bet, and I'm the worst bettor. So I'd rather keep the money. I did do a couple of brackets, but beyond that, I'm happy to just watch the competition and enjoy. I enjoy the competition.
In these brackets, you actually put money in, though, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Okay, okay. That is gambling, isn't it? That's
off
like
the
that's like you
the
and horse
gambling.
Racing.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think is the biggest sports scandal of all time?
The biggest sports scandal of all
there
time. That's a good
many,
question.
Huh?
I
there
didn't prepare for this.
I should have prepared you for that to think about that. Because that might take some time.
That is going to take some time. Having to do with gambling, maybe. I will tell you, I think... well, of course, I wasn't around in 1919. You brought that up earlier. But, you know, the Black Sox scandal, you know, literally happened during a World Series when baseball was the king, what was the biggest sport. So it'd be hard not to pick that. But in my lifetime, I think the scandal of Tim Donaghy, it was just sort of an unthinkable, like that, you know, there's somebody that actually is in went to prison for, you know, throwing games or calling games in such a way that that was one that really opened my eyes. Whether that's the biggest one, I need to think that a little
well,
bit.
Well, that gives me the chills though, because was he on the Untold series with Netflix? Did they do a specific?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
If that was him, I forget the name of it. It's like something about the referee, right? I can't remember the name of it, but if it's about him, my husband and I literally, we watched almost all of the Untold series and we said, we can't do that. Can't watch that one. It will piss me off way too much to think about an umpire, a referee, somebody who's just supposed to be not noticeable, not recognizable, somebody who just calls the game and can change the direction of somebody's path, their hopes, their dreams, their lives, their expectations, everything that they've prepared for in life. It would be too heartbreaking for me. I'd be too angry and I couldn't watch it. So I would have to tell you that I'd have to agree that that is one of the biggest scandals out there in sports history.
Yeah. Your producer said Operation Flagrant Foul was the.
Thank you. Operation Flagrant Foul. That's
and,
right. That's
and it
right.
is so
thank
true.
You, Andrew.
If you want to throw the game, you're not going to go to LeBron James, who makes, you know, tens of millions of dollars a year. You're going to go to a referee that is not even a full-time employee or something along those lines. Like, was that a foul on Shaq or did on the defender? You know, like you could call it either way. It's pretty easy.
Yeah. Still can't watch it. Operation Flagrant Foul. That's right. Can't watch it. Upsets me too much to think of the power that you put the trust and your faith into somebody to call the game. And I would just get too angry. And you see these things happening, and I've heard of them happening in like fourth division leagues in Greece, you know, or third division leagues in Italy. But to think that that actually happened here in the United States is just It's hard to swallow, and I'm certain that it's only a matter of time where sports betting really does affect the outcome of a game.
I hope not, future. But
it scares me. It scares me, but I think that too is inevitable. All right, John, I won't take too much more of your time, but I do have to ask you, who do you think will win this March?
No, the Terps, of course.
Of
right?
course. That was too easy.
No, I have I couldn't take a Maryland to beat Alabama. So I have them out in the second round.
Oh, you do.
And okay. I think Houston is going to go. The Final Four is in Houston. And I think there's a lot of positive energy around that team. So I have Houston winning it all.
You have Houston winning it all. Alabama in the Final Four. Who's your Final Four?
Alabama, Houston. I got UConn sneaking in there and okay. Tennessee.
Sorry, Terps. I hope you enjoy the game today at 12:15 Eastern. And I hope you have a very good rest of your day at around 3 o'clock.
I hope so. Yeah. Hey, Hope, congrats on your podcast. It's great to see that taken off for you.
Thank you, John. I really appreciate it. And thanks for being on today. Thank you for all your expertise and all the work you do. And you have an awesome podcast as well. And I will be tuning in to the rest of the episodes other than the two I listen to. Hope Solo Sphinx is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
SiriusXM Podcasts.